All right, guys, I believe that I am the one of the last talks of the day, and then after that there is a keynote, right? And then you're going home. I'm going home too. Earlier today and yesterday there were two other talks by the guy here in the on row about SPFX, about the new SharePoint framework, and he talked about what it is, how it works, why, what the tool chain is. So he explained all of that. So with that, I assume that you already know that. How many of you already know what it is, how it works, what you can do with it? Everybody? Awesome. So instead, I'd like to share with you some of the tips that I've learned throughout the last weeks and months that I work with that. And with that, I hope that it's going to help you. I'd encourage to tweet about it. I've included the hashtag, and that's the only hashtag that I will react to. So if you would like to ask me anything, use the tag and I will be able to answer it. So this is the last slide that you will see. Well, I actually have one or two more, but as for now, that was the last one. That was the last slide. So instead, I like to share with you, I like to show you how things work and how you work with it. So how many of you work with Angular? One. React? Sergio? Yeah, okay, fair enough. So imagine that you would build Webpart with the new SharePoint framework. Too many windows. So what do you do? You go to your project and you say npm install Angular, right? Everybody knows npm? So that's the NuGet in open source. Think about it that way. So you press enter, and npm is going to go to the internet, download Angular, and add it to your project. Depending on your internet connection, that's going to either be really fast or take a while. But with that, you would be able to use Angular now, right? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with what I've just done? Sorry? The version. Well, I could use Angular 2. Well, I actually can, because Angular 2 doesn't really work with SharePoint framework, but that's not the point here. Any other ideas? Suggestions? Use a CDN. We will get to that in a moment. Here, I forgot one essential thing. Dash dash save. If I don't do it and I check in or commit my source, if somebody else on the team pulls that down and they will try to build, the project will break because they won't have that dependency. NPM installs dependencies in a folder called node underscore modules, which is here, and which is one of the things that you don't commit to source. So if you pull down the project but you don't save dependencies, they won't be there for the rest of your team, and whenever they will try to build the project, it will break. So one tip, like essential tip, whenever you install dependencies, always do dash dash save, or if you don't like to type, you can do npm I angular dash capital S. And that, when done, 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3. Almost there. You would actually expect that it will pull that down from cache, but when you do that, when you use the dash dash save option, what it will do, it will add Angular to your package JSON right here. So it will actually add it to the list of your dependencies, and whenever you build the project, it will whenever you restore dependencies, it will include that as well. So the project will work. Right? So with that, let me show you some more stuff. Let me zoom out and zoom in again. So the web part that I have here doesn't really do much yet, so we just installed Angular. So how about we make a really simple Angular app? So here, oh yeah, and actually to in order to use Angular, I have to add another thing. Who knows what? Typings, because we're working in TypeScript. So we do it by calling tsd install angular, and again, dash dash save. And again, we will install typings, and with that, we will be able to have typed code in the web part. So here, we go back to our code. Let me zoom in a bit. And here, let's say import asterisk as angular. It's not asterisk, it's asterisk. I heard it wrong so many times, like asterisk. No, there is no asterisk here. From Angular. And now we can add some Angular stuff. So let's say Angular module. And we will call it Hello World. That's OK. Yeah, and then let's say Angular Bootstrap. And I, at this point, I don't really care that this won't do anything, but I'm actually trying to prove a point, which I can only do if I do something with Angular. So with that, in theory, we would have an Angular app. So how about we try to build it? So we go to the command line, and we say gal bundle, because that's the way you build a project, right? So it's going to take a while, depending on your machine. On a Mac, it's really fast. Ambient context, what's wrong with that? Typings error. I believe I've upgraded something. Is it already TypeScript 2? All right, guys, all right, that was very nice. I believe that sums it up. Does anyone have idea what's wrong with that? Because we have typing undefined. Yeah, that won't work. How did it get there? All right, round two. Gal bundle. Yes, it's working. For a second, I was really afraid, like, what? I haven't seen that before. So now we build the project, right? And when we do that, what we get on the output is a few files, and they're all installed to the dist folder here, right? So how about we take a look at the size of them? So let me open the folder. Let me increase the window a bit. Let me do this and this. What is the size that you see of the web part that I have just built? 1.2 megs. What does the web part do actually now? Totally nothing. So that's the price you pay for. So first of all, do you think that every single web part that you will build in SPFX will be that big? Who thinks yes? Very good. It isn't. There are a few things that you can do about it, but keep in mind that whenever you include the framework in the bundle of your web part, it will actually add to its size, right? So here we have 1.2 megs, but it isn't fair, right? Because the build that we run is a debug build. So how about we go back and we run ship build, release build. So we do that by calling gal bundle, and then we add to it dash dash ship. And it's the same ship as a boat, like we ship, we sail. So now we will have an optimized version of the project. Now if you go back here, we will see that the bundle is now 174K, which is still a lot if you think about it for a web part that doesn't really do much, right? So what are another options that we have? Ideas. What? Don't pull up. Yeah, but then we need it. We need. Okay, given that we would want to build something with Angular, we really want to use it. Not in the package. Yes. And actually, the great thing is that you can really do that, you can do that really easily. So the one way you can go around it, well, you could fiddle yourself with it. You could try to build your own on-demand loading system, but there is no need for it. What you can do, and you can do that without any change to your code, right? You can go to your config.json file here, which is the one that you get for free. And then in externals, you have to add Angular. So here we can say Angular. And here we add path. And we get the CDN URL, which I have somewhere here in my notes. There you go. And then we include the global name. And we say Angular. So how about we try to build exactly the same thing now? And keep in mind that we didn't change anything in the code, right? We only added these few lines. So if I go back now and I will once again do gulp bundle ship, it's going to build the project. And let's have a look at the size of the files now. So if we go back, there you go, 6K. Well, that's good, right? So that means that we have just saved 168K, right? Yeah. But it isn't fair, right? Because currently there is no Angular in it. So whenever you add the web part to the page, it will still need to pull it down. And it will pull it down from exactly the URL that we just used. And the benefit of that is that if you think about it, if you would include it inside the web part, what do you think the page would do if you would add that web part to the page? I mean, Angular is there, right? So it wouldn't do anything. What do you think the page would do if you would add the web part to the page twice? You would pull down Angular twice. Well, actually, it would be included within the web part. So you would load it twice. What do you think if you would use the web part across your whole intranet, like here and there? For every single instance, you would have exactly that overhead of pulling down Angular. Why? If you load it from a URL, like here, if it's cached once in client and you use exactly the same URL across your whole intranet, you'll only pull it down once. And as long as it's cached, you won't pull it down again, which is a great benefit, like 170Ks about per web part. Well, that's a lot given the whole intranet and all the web parts that you might have, right? So keep in mind that whenever you use something else, something external, or whenever you want to use external library, load it from external URL. It can be public CDN, it could be your own place where you store stuff, but don't embed it in bundle because it doesn't have any point and it only bloats the size of your package. And whenever you load external scripts, there is one thing you have to keep in mind. So as you've seen now, I've added Angular. So imagine that I wanted to add the ng Office UI Fabric scripts to actually have my Angular web part styled as the rest of Office. So here, I would go to here and I would say ng Office UI Fabric. And I don't really mind about the URL or the way I type it, but here I would do something like that. So as you've seen, or as you can see now, for Angular, I had to add path and the name, while for ng Office UI Fabric, not. Why is it so? Why is that the case? Why did I do that? Why didn't I do exactly the same twice? So why didn't I just specify a URL for Angular, but also had to include some additional stuff as well? It has to do with the fact how that script that you want to load is built. How many of you know about things like AMD, UMD, non-AMD? Few of you. So basically, all of these acronyms are formats of scripts or of packages, how scripts are built. So non-AMD is common name that refers to just scripts that just load within in global scope of the page and actually attach themselves to window namespace. Whereas AMD, UMD are actually scripts that are encapsulated within a module. So think of it as a scope, and when it, and whatever you load inside won't be available to anything else on the page, right? So that way, imagine that your web part would load jQuery, and one of them on the page would load jQuery 1, another one would load jQuery 2. If you load jQuery as AMD module, they won't conflict with each other. But if you load them as non-AMD modules, they will collide, and the last one will override everything else, right? So, can you choose yourself whether you load a script as AMD module or non-AMD? Who thinks you can? No one. What's that? Yes, so developer who builds the script determines how it's served. And here's exactly the example, right? Angular has been built as a non-AMD module, so this is exactly why we not only have to specify its URL from which we load it, but also the name of the global variable to which it needs or it will attach itself. Whereas ngOffice UI Fabric is UMD module. So we don't need to do anything for it except for specifying the URL and the SharePoint framework will load it by itself correctly. So whenever you want to load an external script, how do you know whether it's AMD, non-AMD, UMD? How do you tell it? Okay, and then just fiddle around, hope it's going. You're gonna write, paste it, run. Oh yeah, it breaks. Okay, try another one. You can do that. Yeah, that's probably one way you can do it. Actually, I thought about simplifying that a bit. So I tried to build a tool that helps you do exactly that, to help you guess or, well, figure out, if you will, the type of your script. So let me try to pull it up, which is here. And here, can you see it in the back? Yep. So it asks you to either specify the URL or the source. And that tool is currently POC, right? So if there is interest, it will evolve, it will become more, and it will be of more help to you. But the basic idea is you go to the page, you paste the URL of the script that you want to add, so like in my case, Angular, and you ask the tool to come up with the format of the script, and it says non-AMD. Boom, there you go. So what if I use ngOffice UI Fabric instead? How about that? UMD, bingo. So that tool makes it way easier for you to figure out like the exact type. And actually, some ideas that I had was to also provide you directly here with snippet of code that you have to use to include that in project. So for example, for Angular, what if you would see on the page exactly this, like copy paste this here and it works? Would you be interested in it? Would it be a thing that you would use? Like, yeah, nah, I love to go to the source by myself. Perfect. Excellent. Yeah, so that's the one thing that you have to keep in mind, that depending on the format of your script, there's different way for you to load it. And there's also another way in which you have to deal with dependencies. So for example, Angular, or you might have something that depends on Angular, right? And Angular is a non-AMD module, so it means that you have to specify dependencies by yourself. Because for AMD modules and UMD modules, the dependencies are specified directly within the module already, right? So the developer thought about dependencies, like for example, ngOffice UI Fabric says, I depend on Angular. That's it. But Angular or anything else that's a non-AMD module, you have to do it by yourself, because otherwise they might load in parallel and things will break because one script will depend on another which isn't there. So one way to go around it here is you can say global depths, and then you can specify array of names of the things that that script depends on. So here, if I, for example, had, let's say, Angular UI, in theory just, right, I would say that global dev is Angular, because Angular UI depends on Angular. So SharePoint framework now will know that it should load Angular first and Angular UI then. Right, so that's an easy way for you to manage dependencies in your non-AMD modules. But if you think about non-AMD, I'd actually try to convince you that you should avoid using them at all. Why? Why do you think I'd like you not to use it? No clue? What do you think that happens when you load a non-AMD script on a page in web part? That script becomes available to everything else on a page. As I said, it attaches itself in the main scope, global scope on a page. So if you have web part that uses jQuery 1 loaded as non-AMD, everything on the page will be able to use it, which is cool, until you add another web part that loads jQuery 2, and then it will break. So, and the thing is, so in the world of client-side apps, where developers build apps that own the whole page, that's not an issue, right? Because when you build a page, you compose a page, you know exactly every single element of it. But here we work with web parts that users add to pages. So whenever you build this, you have no clue where the web part will be added, whether there will be any other things on the page, how many of them, which frameworks will they use. You have no clue. There is no way for you to know all of that up front. And the only way for you to ensure that your web part will work is to be defensive and not use anything or not expose anything of yourself to global scope. Because that way you will prevent from polluting the page and you won't collide with anything else that might be there, right? So if you have a choice, stay away from non-AMD, because there's a big risk that it will break eventually. And yeah, well, yes, or just show a big red box. This is a non-AMD web part. Don't add anything else. If you add this web part to the page, don't add anything else on the page. Yeah, but basically that's the idea of it, yeah. I mean, there could be a chance. Well, with Angular, there's also another thing, right? So currently we have, I guess, the latest Angular 1 version is 1.5.8. And the question is, how long will that go on, and when will Google switch to Angular 2, right? Because that's already shipped. But the problem with that is that Angular 2 doesn't really work with the idea of web part, because Angular 2 has to know up front every single component that you know that you add on a page, whereas the web parts, well, you can have one of them on a page, five of them. You can have two instances of the same, or you can have none. And given the fact that Angular is not a part of the modern page, well, there is no way for you to instrument your web part in a way that it will work. It will work if you add one instance of your web part to the page, but as soon as you add another one, it will break. So you can have two different web parts on a page built with Angular 2, but not multiple instances of the same. So currently there is no way for us to use it. In the future, maybe yes. I hope so, but yeah, well, that depends on the the other folks on the Angular team and SPFX team and whether they will come up with an idea how we could work around that. All right. Whenever you work with Angular, let's stick with Angular for one more minute here. Whenever you work with Angular, like, what do you think happens when you bootstrap your Angular app more than once? Will you get two apps? Three apps? Well, it breaks. Angular doesn't like you to bootstrap the same app multiple times. It only wants the Angular app to be bootstrapped once. You load a single page app once, and from that point on, everything else, every change on the page, routes, everything is managed directly within Angular itself, right? The way we build Angular web parts with Angular is here in the render, we would have a template. So we would have here, for example, a template, and we would say ng controller, which would be our controller, home controller, SVM, and we could keep all of that or we could not. That's up to us. So let's make it a bit more compact. We could do this. We could say VM hello. We could do that, and we could here add here controller. And we would say hello, no, home controller has been called. We would have function. So we would do this, we would do this, and here we would say this, hello. Yeah, I have a typo here. And you guys don't tell me anything. Come on. One more div. One more div. Yep. Yeah, and he would say, hi from ng, right? And that would work in a way. This one goes here, this one goes here. Let me do some cleaning. Yeah, and that would work in theory. Do you know what the problem is with this approach? Yep. What, sorry? Yes, yeah, so the render function is called multiple times. When? Upon each stage change. So every single time you fiddle with the web part, you will change its property or do something else, the render function will be called. And with this, Angular Bootstrap. There you go, line 29. So how can you go around it? Well, there's actually a nifty trick that we can use that's already available for us within the web part itself. So here what we can do is we can say if this, the web part, rendered once, equals, we want to be really sure, like, it hasn't really rendered yet. So we wrap all of that in if rendered once equals false, then bootstrap Angular, otherwise don't. So that way you can ensure that your Angular app will bootstrap only once, only when it's loaded initially on the page. And every single time you would change the state, it wouldn't. So that's an easy way to work around the fact that render is being called multiple times when you are on a page. Does that make sense? Questions about Angular? No? Sorry?
Don't use it.
Don't use it. Well, yeah. Use React, right? Go React. All right. There's another thing when you work with web parts, so by Angular, there you go. No more Angular. Let me show you another thing. Let me pull up another demo. And actually, I believe I can run this one in the browser as well, so that you will see not only code, but you will actually see the web part in action. How about that? It's building now. Any moment now. It's all live, right? Certificate error. I don't mind. Another error, I don't mind. And let me add the web part to the page, and let me edit it. Description field. So this is how you can edit the web part on the page, and this is how users can change it, configure it, right? And in the past, well, not really in the past. Users have tendency to use web parts in ways that developers didn't envision it. They tend to use property values that we didn't think about or do things that we didn't want them to. And in the past, there wasn't really an easy way for us to validate or to check their input, right? So there wasn't an easy way to catch that error directly when they input it, right? And here in the new SharePoint framework, we actually can quite easily do that. So let me just check if that's already in place. Yes, it is. So now let's say I would do something like that. I would want to have like really long description, like hello world, like 8 times. Like, ooh, hey, that's long. You see that? And then you can also see that the render doesn't work beyond that point. So as soon as I get error, as soon as the web part sees that I try to add a value that's invalid, it will stop. It won't run, which is great, right? Because you don't want to run and break your code doing things that you didn't want to, only because the user said, I want this. I really want to have this value there. Yeah, but it's invalid. But I want it. No. So that's a really easy way for us to do it. And the way you do it is when you go to your properties, there's one additional. So here is the place inside the web part where you say, okay, so I have property called description. And the label of that is this string. And then there's also additional thing that we can pass, which is a function that validates the value. So here we have the this validate description, which is the function that we have here, and its argument is description that we enter, and then we return, and that's really odd. So when the value is invalid, well, so actually here it makes sense. So the way it works, if the value is invalid, you return the error message. Otherwise, you return an empty string. Right? So for a check that you can do directly in place in your code, that's good. But another check that you could, for example, do is imagine that that would be some additional check that you have additional API to call for. So you don't want to do it in place. Well, what you do then is you change that to promise. So you would say promise of string. And you would do that. And here it's exactly the place where it gets a bit odd. Because when the value is invalid, you reject the promise. While if it's invalid, you resolve the promise with your error message. Wasn't it supposed to work the other way around? Like if it's valid, you resolve empty. Whether it's invalid, you reject it with error. But yeah, so it's actually the other way around. So whenever you get error, you resolve it with error, and whenever everything's good, you reject it. So keep that in mind. That it doesn't. So whenever you are going to build this and your gut feeling says do it that way, you know that you are supposed to do opposite. If you still know the hashtag, I reckon you tweet about it. All right. Another thing that you should do actually is when you build the web parts is there are times when you want to log stuff, right? When you want to keep track of things and whenever things break, you want to be able to debug it, right? And well, all of that runs on client. So there is no server-side logs, well, by default, that you can use to write to, right? So you can only write to client, to browser. And the way we do it is console.log, console.error, console.warn. And we can do it, but that means that you introduce dependency to console in your code, and you won't be able to test that when console isn't there. And actually, the great thing is that within SharePoint framework, there is actually a class called log that we can reuse that actually offers us some additional abilities. So it allows us to format the messages, and it's already there. It's already part of the framework. So why not just reuse that? So the way we do it is, let me go to console, clear it, because there's a lot of stuff there out of the box already. And we didn't do anything else except load the page. So let me add the web part to the page. And here you can see, here is the, well, that didn't work. I want this. So here is the log statement that we include in our code. Web part dot instance. Well, that's really odd in Dutch. And then the log instance. I really, you know what? Let me, I don't know if we can edit that afterwards. Let me clear the logs and edit again. I hope that it will get another GUID. No. Crap. Sorry. Yeah, so with that, you can log to the output, right? And you can do it really easily. So you get, the only thing that you have to do is you go here and you import the log from the @Microsoft/SP client base. And then in your code, you only set log and then you pick the level. And there are a few things that you have to pass. So the first is the name of your class, and that could be anything, or component name, or anything that you can identify the log from, right? So you pass that first. Then you pass the message, and then you pass the service scope. If you do it that way, you will get logs that integrate within framework. So don't reinvent reinvent logging by yourself. Use this. And although it's still early and it's limited what we can do with that, we've seen in the source of it, because we can see its source, that there are some additional abilities that might become available eventually, such as login providers, be able to plug in your own, log to App Insights or anything else. So it seems like it's capable of doing that, but it's not available to us yet. So if you start doing it that way, there is a chance that when it will be available, you will be able to benefit of it. Whereas if you choose to build your own, well, then you're on your own, which isn't always a bad thing, right? Another thing, debugging, right? So here is our code, our TypeScript code. Is that the code that is shipped, you think? Is that the code that runs in browser? Well, yes, so the code that runs in browser, let me show that, is this. Webpack external module 2.8, some other stuff. Where's my code? Well, here is some of it, and there's some other code that isn't mine, right? So debugging might seem like an awkward thing. Like, how do you get through that code, and how do you see bugs in it? How do you step through it? Because that's not the code you know, right? I mean, you write this. You don't write this. Well, actually, the great thing is that whenever you build debug build, you can go here to sources. You can go to Webpack, which is here, all the way down. And then two dots. And then to source, all the way down. Web parts, hello world. And here are your TS files. And here is exactly my TypeScript source. So how does Google Chrome know that? Source maps, bingo. He knows it already. So the way it works is here, whenever on every debug build, you get additional file called map. And here you see the list of all files included inside the bundle, and then the maps between locations in bundle and location inside code. So here, if you scroll all the way down, here is your raw TypeScript code. And using that, developer tools know how to map generated code to your lines in code. And with that, you can here set breakpoints. You can do anything you want. So we can set breakpoint here. I can log to here. I can do type 2. And here you see breakpoint in my TypeScript code in browser. How cool is that? How many time do you have? 5 minutes? Something like that, yeah? Yeah, so let me show you one more thing, and then we are going to wrap it up, because time flies when you're having fun, right? Let me show you another demo, which is the one here. Let me do Let me open the code and let me run it. Gulp surf. It's running, it's building. Any moment now. All right, so this is the web part that I've built that shows you weather for a place. So we are in Amsterdam, there you go. So here's the weather. The one thing that's not really that optimal about it now is if you look at the, you know, let me open it in Chrome quickly, because that's just a bit easier to see there, network. So, I mean, the web part itself does not predict the weather, right? It pulls it down from the internet. That would be actually fun if it did, but it doesn't. So here, when I type Amsterdam, what you see is one request, another one, because I type fast, but if I just really slow, like A, M, S, T, you get web call for every single change that I make here. And if I would change like value for number of days for which I want to show it or anything else, for every single change, there will be yet another call to get the data. And that's not really cool. That's not really what you want to do. That's not really the experience that you want to have whenever you work with external data source in web parts. So an easy way to work around it is to set the property pane to what's called a non-reactive mode. So a non-reactive mode is a mode where, as the name says, the web part doesn't react to changes inside property pane by itself. So we go there, we go to the web part, we go to the TS, we uncomment some stuff. It's going to rebuild and refresh. And if we go back here, if we change this, now you can see here, apply. It wasn't there first. So now if I type, let me zoom out a bit. Let me clear the log, and I will type Amsterdam, no requests. Apply is now blue, it's now active. So if I click that, only then the web part will apply changes. So whenever you work with an external source, you should choose this non-reactive approach. Because otherwise you will just add traffic to your network without any purpose. Right, so keep that in mind. With that, let me quickly go back to the slides, to the one slide that I have, the one more slide that I have. So I'd like to encourage you to give it a go, give it a try. Who already built their own their first web part? A few of you. Very good. So I encourage everybody else to give it a try. Check out the dog samples. Check out the content on my blog. I try to share as much as I found out on my blog. And if there is anything else that you would like to ask, use the hashtag and ask me about it, and I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can. With that, thank you, guys.